the agenda is posted right here in IRC. And so I'll just give a quick overview of what we're talking about today. We'll do the IP notes, call notes, scribe selection, introductions and reintroductions, announcements and reminders. We'll do progress and action items, and then we're also going to review the CCG voting procedures for Chair B, and then we'll end on the SVIP interoperability plug fest. And add yourself to the queue. Let me know if there's anything else you'd like to discuss, or just add it during the appropriate section of the call. Okay, IP note, anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributors to any CCG work items must be members of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. And you can join the CCG at the link I'm pasting into IRC now. And you'll need to ensure you have a W3C account, which you can do at the following link, and to see the text of the W3C Community Contributor License Agreement, it's at this call note. The minutes and an audio recording of everything said on this call are archived at our meeting minute location, pasted into IRC. We use IRC to cue speakers on the call as well as to take minutes. Let's see. All attendees should type present plus the word present and the symbol plus, no space in between, to get your name on the attendee list. And if you look in IRC, you can see other people doing that right now. And then in IRC, if you want to add yourself to the queue, please type Q plus, the letter Q, symbol plus, no space in between. And you can add an optional reminder with the word T-O in between. So Q plus to mention something. And if you're not on IRC, simply ask to be put on the queue, and please be brief so the rest of the queue can get a chance to chime in. Okay, scribe selection. Do we have any volunteers for scribing today? If not, I will start calling on someone from the list. Okay, I'm going to skip over the people that I don't see or see. I think we need an update of our scribe list soon. Marcus, I made it all the way to you. Are you able to scribe today?
Yes, I'd be happy to do.
Thank you so much. Okay, next section of the call, we'll do introductions and reintroductions. And I'm hearing some, myself. it's maddening. It's people in mind muting themselves. Okay, it sounds like no feedback now. Okay. Oh, right. We're doing introductions and reintroductions. I see a couple of aliases that might be new to the call. I'm going to call on a couple of people. The first one, Jin, I'm probably not pronouncing it right, Jin Hyung Kim. Are you new to the call? If so, would you introduce yourself? Okay, I'll skip over. I see Jorge, who is unfamiliar alias. Jorge, do you mind introducing yourself?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. So my name is Jorge del Prado. I'm President Director for Folio Technologies, recently joined DIAC. So I was quite interested in listening to you today. Was the outcome of that exercise you did with standards and W3C. So that's me.
Great. Thank you for joining. And is it the DIAC, the Canadian DIAC?
Yep.
Okay, great. I'm just making sure so we can update our list. And I had made an attempt. I thought you said Jorge Prado, P-R-A-D-O. Correct me if I got that wrong. And anyone else on the call that would like to introduce themselves?
Yeah, Don Waugh. I'm with Applied Recognition and a member of DIAC. DIAC, Joni Brennan invited us today, so hope that's okay.
It's excellent. Thank you for joining. And let me just make sure I got your name right. Don Hua?
Sorry, Hua, W-A-U-G-H.
W-A-U-G-H. Oh, got it. Thank you.
Hello, it's Andrew Johnston. I'm also a DIAC member. I work at a company called Two Keys, which does manage security services.
Great. Thank you for joining. Okay, so I don't see any other new aliases. Maybe we'll do the reintroductions. Actually, David Mason, are you able to reintroduce yourself?
Yes, hi, I'm David Mason. I work in digital identity in the Government of Canada. I'm a software developer and just trying to follow all this stuff.
Great, thanks for joining us. Okay. Now let's move to announcements and reminders. We keep track of them at the following location. It's URL and pasting to IRC, but I'll read through them. And we also have a DIF event. I'm not sure if Balaz is here. He doesn't seem to be, but I'll try to read that out. Okay, so what are the highlights? We have Identiverse coming up. That's June 8th through 11th, and that's a virtual conference. That's Identiverse.
I'm sorry, Kim. It's actually 8 weeks long now.
Oh, 8 weeks?
It's 8 weeks long. So there's like they just published the schedule yesterday. So they basically spread a lot of the content over a lot longer period of time. So it's worth going and looking at the schedule to see if there's stuff you want to watch. And I believe I signed up. It didn't cost me anything. So anyways, new data.
Great. Thank you for clarifying. okay. And now for the regular events, and then I'll mention the DIF special events. So we have the weekly CCG calls. You're on it now. We have a few other weekly calls, the verifiable credentials for education. We meet Mondays at 8 a.m. Pacific, and we have a pretty good, we've skipped a few weeks, but we have a good schedule coming up very soon, so you can see the schedule there. What else do we have? Okay, DID resolution calls. Mondays, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, and then the secure data storage calls, which is a CCG and a DIF regular meeting, and those happen Thursdays, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. And then the special announcement that I had, and let me see, I have a link for it. So DIF is having a special event, and apologies, I just saw this email, so I don't, I'm trying to summarize it, but I think it's basically a place to, you know, sort of talk about interop collaboration and working together. It will be an open call, 4 to 5 hours on the 16th of June. Not IPR protected, but it would be a good place to talk about, without getting into details, you know, things similar to the secure data storage discussion, but, you know, applied to the newer areas of emerging standardization with credential exchange protocols, for example, CHAPI and similar work happening in DIF with verifiable presentation exchange, DIDCOM, et cetera. And so let me include a link to that. So I think that even though he extended the invitation to CCG, I think that that's just fully open. If anyone can talk to that, please add yourself to the queue and let me know. Okay, let's get to progress on action items, which we'll review in just a second. Okay, we have a few things to review. We keep track of the issues currently in GitHub, and we tag a few to review next. I think that two of these that we have flagged, or actually one of them we have flagged, it, we're going to talk about in just a second. So run CCG co-chair election. I'll come back to that. Closing the digital verification community group, I think that we're ready to close that. So here's the issue here. We have been through a long process, Ori did a lot of legwork to migrate repositories. Joe notified the W3C powers and Ivan responded and said, yep, looks good from W3C. So I think there's nothing to do. So I think we can close this issue unless there are any objections, speak now or yeah.
Plus one.
Okay, great. Let's close it. Okay. And I think, so Wayne just elected last week, but already doing great things. If he's able to speak up, Wayne, I was wondering if I could invite you to briefly talk about the screen sharing platform. We created an issue on it, but I know you've been doing a lot of looking into this.
Yeah, sure. So right now, one of the issues is that it's really easy to share your screen and demonstrate a concept, and we don't have a great way to do that within this working group. And there have been a few ways to do that proposed, including getting a Zoom subscription, and there's also some open source non-proprietary alternatives, such as Jitsi. Sorry for the background noise. And we're just in the process of evaluating what could be a good fit for our values, meeting the use case requirements, et cetera, and all the work's going to be going on that issue. And I'll post a link to that issue.
Okay, great. Okay, and then let's see if we have any other issues. Okay, great. I think we are going to talk about running the CCG co-chair election next. Let me just check the queue, make sure no one added that. Okay, so let's go to reviewing the CCG voting procedures for Chair B. So a quick reminder, we have two nominees. That's Joe Andrew and Heather Vesant. And can I tee up Joe or Christopher to talk through the voting procedures that were discussed?
Sure. Chris, are you online?
Yes, I am.
You want to take that since I'm in the election?
Oh.
Sure. yes, yeah, so what we've decided to do, so the rules are that people who vote have to be members of the CCG as of a particular date, which was the announcement of the election. So what we want to do is have three volunteers receive votes and then tally them against the list and then basically share their results, which should match. In addition, our W3C contact Ivan will also archive the emails in case there's any dispute or anything of that nature, but he's not going to be tallying the results. So we have asked Ori, Kalia, and Dan to do these tallies. We'll be setting up a email alias to mail to them, and then the archive at W3C, and then they will, at the end of the week, tally the results, and the winner with the most results will be announced at the next meeting. Did I miss any details?
I think that sounded good. Joe?
Two questions. One, did we get confirmation from all three that they were willing to help us out? I know Ivan got back to us and a couple of the invited parties.
I think so. Ori, are you on board? I wasn't quite sure, but it sounded like it. But I did hear back from Dan, definitely from Dan, and definitely from Clea.
Okay, and Ori would
prefer not to.
Right. Okay. Well, we'll find someone else. I guess if you're interested, go ahead and chime up in the chat, and the chairs will consider our options and reach out to someone. So we still need to get that list, that triumvirate together, and then we also have to figure out who, what email alias we're using. I think that's the last logistical bottleneck. Then we'll send it out by announcement.
Great. If you have any questions about this, just add yourself to the queue. Oh, Chris Winchesky volunteered to count, by the way. Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, thanks, Chris.
Brent is on the queue.
So is it a vote per CCG member or per member organization? Is there a difference there?
I thought it was per member. Joe, Christopher, is that right?
My understanding is per member. Chris?
Yeah, my understanding is it's per member, but it needs to be, you know, it needs to be registered, you know, that that member is a representative of the, you know, of the company if there's, I mean, basically, you know, do you show up in the members list?
That's
is
right.
What we're looking at. The only exception is there's like.
Yeah, for reference on the W3C official, our official site, CCG site, there's a list of members there. So that's people who have officially signed up for the group. So it sounds like that would be the list of people that we're considering count the votes from.
Can we get a link to that in the chat?
Yeah, I'll paste it in.
Thank you. I was just looking for it, but I have a hard time navigating the WCC.
the only small caveat to that list is a list as of today, and you had to be a member as of the announcement, which is a defense against shenanigans. So the announcement was roughly a month ago.
Yeah.
And there's been like six people added since, so... we'll have to let the tally people know who the people were that have been added since.
Okay. And Heather is up on the queue. Heather?
Yeah, I just wanted to get real clarity on the date that people had to join by, because you guys haven't stated that date. And I also wanted to know that link too, because and also, yeah, I guess I just have a, like, I wasn't clear. I mean, I don't want there to be shenanigans, let's just be clear. But there's also, you know, people that follow this. I mean, I'm just wondering, like, did people have to join when, like, when was the election announced? Was it, does that count as when, it's a call for people for the spots, or a call for when you realize there's going to be an election? And I realize this might be splitting hairs a little bit, but there might be people that want to participate that were less interested in participating prior to knowing there is a possibility of even having an election. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I'm checking. So you said, Joe, you said May 12th was the date of the announcement.
Yeah.
I am curious, like, so my memory is failing me, but were we clear at the time that there would be a cutoff date?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, I never saw a date, and in my mind, it would seem like the cutoff date in being able to vote would be like the day that, whatever, the last day for call for submissions would be like the Monday, the 25th or whatever. That seems to me to be like the right time to have the cutoff. And I never saw any explicit things like you could vote or not vote in the election prior to May 12th. I've never heard that date until today. So if you guys want to like figure out clarification on that, that'd be great, because clearly we want the right people to vote. But at the same time, like, I think that there was not awareness that there was going to be a vote for the CCG, even an opportunity, or even had a discussion about, I mean, you last week, you guys even said, we've never had a vote, we've never even thought about what kind of, you know, election protocol we would follow, et cetera. So I just want to be really clear and make sure that we're not cutting off the ability for people to vote appropriately. Clearly, anyone who votes, anyone who registers from like here on out or whatever, like the 25th on out, shouldn't vote, right? Because that makes sense. But I do think there's a question in my mind, because I didn't hear this particular date as the cutoff date until right now.
Right. And it seems like a few of us are confused about that too. Manu, you're up next.
Yeah, just to agree with Heather, I was not aware that there was going to be a cutoff date so I think the only, you know, what we could do at this point is we point to a place where it's on the public record of that cutoff date for people that can vote being asserted, or it didn't happen, and we set it, you know, that email does go out for the cutoff date. I expect that there's probably not going to be a lot of voting shenanigans that go on, so I think it's totally fine to, you know, establish that this week if we can't point to something on the official record. The other thing that I wanted to clarify, who can vote? You know, folks pointed to this thing, but those are just individuals. So is this an individual-based vote or a company-based vote? Having a company and multiple people from the company attend these meetings, so DigiBazaar has multiple people come up to these meetings, I feel very uncomfortable with having it be an individual vote. I recognize that would collapse all of DigiBazaar's vote into a single vote, but given the size of some companies and what I've seen happen in these sorts of things, it really should be one member, one vote, meaning if you're an individual, you get one vote, and if you're one company with 100 people, you get one vote. It's an attempt to really make this a community group versus just another place where, you know, large corporations can come and stuff ballots for lack of a more gentle way of putting it. That's it.
So as far as the announcements, I'm sorry,
who's talking? Okay, actually, let me I want to chime in. I'm going to time box this to 2 more minutes. I do want to say, Manu, I get your point in theory. I think in practice, if you look through the actual people who are registered for W3C, I don't think that's the case, that it's, you know, like 100 sort of members of one company. But I think that all of this demonstrates that we have to, we have a little bit of work to do around the election. I don't think we'll solve it right now. But I'll go through the rest of the queue, and that is Joe and Dan. So Joe, you're up next.
Yeah. So, I just want to speak to the posted record, which I've put in my, right? It's right there in my act. So this was the follow-up to the announcement. So the announcement was made on a call on May 12th. Chris Allen sent out this email with the details, which clearly specifies if you're not a member as of Tuesday, May 12th, you don't get to vote. And the charter specifically uses the word member. So the question is, what is a member of the CCG? It does not say a member of the W3C, which would be, right, a different class. So I guess there could be some interpretive questions about what a member is, but I don't want to address which way that goes, because I think that's a big can of worms.
Okay, and Dan, you're up next.
No, I think it's clear based on what Joe just said. You know, it's yeah.
Okay. Do we have any other things? So I think we still may have an outstanding issue around members versus companies. Dan, actually, can I ask you to weigh in on that real fast? Oh, actually, it looks like
individuals versus member companies. Manu's absolutely right. I've personally witnessed room packing. But I think there is potentially a risk for this, but I think one of the best things actually was that announcement of a date, right? So it's when you announce that there's going to be an election and all of a sudden a whole bunch of people show up who have never been involved. That's when, you know, that's when you have to wonder, you know, about those people and their motivations, right, in the group, whether it's a company or it's a whole bunch of individuals or whatever. We can look at it, those of us who are, you know, who are going to be tallying the votes. As a group, we can look at it, and if it looks like there's some crazy, overwhelming, you know, one company has 40 votes or something, then I think, you know, we can do something about that. In most cases, we're only talking about maybe 2 or 3, and the companies that have those votes are, because they're members, are companies whose members are participating regularly also, right? Which I think was your statement as well, Kim.
Yeah. Okay, great. And I think Christopher is last on the queue, and then we'll move on.
Right. So I just wanted to be clear that the chairs get a list of all the changes as people join and leave. And there's only been like 5 or 6 changes since May 12th. So it's a small group of people that might not be eligible. We do need to collect those messages and send it to the talliers, but you know, my take on it is that, you know, if you are listed as a member yourself, you can vote. If you're if you've been coming and your company is listed and you're not, you can't. It's a individual vote, not a corporate vote. And that's the way our charter had described it. If we needed to change that, the new charter change mechanism is a lot easier, and we can do that if necessary. I don't see that there's a need right now, though.
Great. Okay, so we have solved every remaining issue there, and we can comfortably move on to the next one, which is the Silicon Valley Innovation Program's Interoperability Plugfest that was sponsored by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. We do have Anil John on the call. And so it sounded like the flow that we're interested in is to have the companies involved in the program report out and reserve some time for Anil at the end to talk about some of the next steps and gaps that he sees in the ecosystem for that we need to address going forward. So with that, I will turn over to someone. Manu, is that you?
I could start, sure. I think Anil's here. Anil, are you on the phone?
I am definitely here, Manu. I'm happy to have you guys, you know, do your thing, and I can answer any questions from the government side and add a bit of color to what our perspective is. But I definitely wanted to make sure that this was something that you guys did with no influence from me, both the good and the ill. So have at it now.
Got it. Okay. Thanks, Anil. I can start off. There are so just to give some people a background on the Silicon Valley Innovation Program, the Department of Homeland Security Silicon Valley Innovation Program. This is a program run by the DHS. In the United States, that effectively creates contracts between companies working on technologies that might be helpful to Department of Homeland Security. Primarily, this particular set of member companies, this particular set of companies that participated in the SVIP program are companies that were building or deploying decentralized identifiers or verifiable credentials or technologies in that ecosystem. The vast majority of the companies that were awarded these contracts are active participants in this credentials community group. One of the things that the program's trying to do, as Anil talked about at the Internet Identity Workshop, is to ensure that there is good open standards in place for the technologies that we are creating. So either there are specifications that are intended to go on the standards track. The desire is to prevent really combat vendor lock-in, to demonstrate that there is real interoperability. So it's not just a bunch of companies saying that they interop, but they can actually demonstrate real interoperability. And all kinds of good things along those lines. The other really interesting thing about the program is that it's open for companies outside of the United States. So typically, when you see programs like this, they're limited to just, for example, people just in the European Union or just in the United States or just in Canada or so on and so forth. The DHS SVIP program is really novel, I think, in that respect, in that it accepts anyone from anywhere in the world working on, DIDs and verifiable credentials, for example. So one of the things that happened, a part of all of the companies that engaged, and I believe there were 8 total, that were awarded contracts. One of the things that we had to do is actually demonstrate interoperability between the systems that we were deploying. So there were a variety of use cases that we were looking at. This is all public, on the public record, by the way. The use cases that we were looking at is were things like the permanent resident card. in taking that digital in the United States. There were a bunch of supply chain use cases around timber and steel imports and verifiable credentials around you know, who is producing that and how is it coming in you know, to the United States and things like that. So these are real use cases, real governments you know, involved. You know, real technology, real products being built out to achieve these use cases. And the common, you know, underpinning thing is we were all using decentralized identifiers. We were all using verifiable credentials. A number of us were using encrypted data vaults, all technologies that were conceived to some part in this community group, right? So this is really exciting stuff. At the very end of it, we had to demonstrate interoperability, and that meant that we had to do things like show that you could have one company issuing a verifiable credential, another company's digital wallet coming up and picking up that verifiable credential and storing it in the digital wallet, and then that digital wallet taking it to some other verifier system created by yet another company, and having that other company verify it. This required us to do real technical interop between DID methods, between resolvers, using things like the credential handler API protocol, or CHAPI, and other things, and you know, encrypted data vaults, and other things that, again, community worked on. So I'm going to stop there. That's kind of an overview background on what DHSS VIP, you know, is and does, the companies, what the expectation was there for interoperability, you know, why we were doing it. We'll go into kind of what happened next, but I wanted to pause here to see if anyone else in the cohort wanted to add anything, or if Anil, you had anything that you'd like to add.
The only thing that I would like to add is I just sent an overview deck to the credential community listserv. My apologies if it is taking a long while to get there. That sort of talks to our use cases, talks to our you know, all the companies that were participating in there. So all of the things that Manu just mentioned, including details about our program, I think the key takeaway that I want to, I put it in that email that I actually wanted to share, is that we demonstrated interop between seven independent technology companies using seven independent platforms, including Factum, Hyperledger Fabric, Hyperledger Indy, MavenX NeoFlow, Transmute for Trade, Universal Issuer and Verifier, and Veris One, using the baseline of the standards that have been incubated, argued about, championed in this particular working group, and at W3C, right? So this is, to paraphrase Manu, real interop. This is not software monoculture. This is not the new version of an ESV. This is real interop, multi-party interop. And anybody who may make the argument that this is impossible or is a bridge too far, and we still have, we still cannot do it, is I will defer to everybody else on the thing, but I think we concretely demonstrated it. Doesn't mean that there is not more work to be done, but this is where we are in the status of interop, right? So I'll stop there. And I just saw that it showed up in the community list as well. So again, the use cases and the companies and the information are there for you to take a look at so that you have a bit of a background.
Thank you. We do have a queue building up, and I want to get back to Anil to talk about the challenges going forward. But first, let's start with Ori.
Yeah, I just wanted to, say, thank you to Anil and the other SBIP cohort companies. I think this work in particular has been, really, really helpful in terms of demonstrating technical interoperability. and it's not done. And so expect to see the verifiable credentials examples repo continue to be maintained, to see the test suites for the HTTP APIs for verifiable credentials continue to be maintained, and for that specification to continue to be developed as a CCG work item. So just speaking to the technical parts that I love so much, those are the areas where if you're interested in collaborating, contributing, even if you were, you know, not a part of any of these programs or not one of these companies mentioned, all CCG members are welcome to contribute to those specifications and test suites.
Thank you. And Jonathan Holt, you're up next.
Yeah, Anil, I think I mentioned this to you. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes, all clear.
So I mentioned this to you in person back in Menlo Park, which is my concern about having this hard constraint about JSON-LD being a must constraint. And I think the DID specification has evolved, and actually we have JWTs and now CBOR ideally soon. And so I think it's it does percolate some areas of the technology on reliance on an emerging technology. And I think, and I tried to spell that out in my own application, but got shot down because of actually that hard constraint. So is there a plans for other interoperability to expand the proof testing specifications?
So I'll answer it one way, right? From our perspective, our focus continues to be on JSON-LD. And the problem set that you're solving for us does require that. That has not changed. I don't anticipate that it's as changing going forward, right? So there are a lot of very good reasons that I think if you ask the people who are involved in it can give you as well. But in general, we actually have companies in our portfolio, in this cohort, that in addition to supporting JSON-LD as a proof mechanism, also supports other mechanisms. We go to town. That is their business model. Fully support their desire to sort of provide support across the broader ecosystem. And I'm happy to, we're not stopping them in any way, shape, or form, right? So we just need to make sure that what we require is focused on, does require explicit support for JSON-LD. And that's not going to change.
Let's see, Manu's up next.
Yeah, I wanted to, if there's, well, Marcus, I can scribe to you. I don't know if scribe for you if you wanted to add anything to the baseline. I was getting ready to go into what the things that we didn't think were going to be difficult that ended up being difficult. Marcus, would you like an opportunity to chime in?
Yes, sure. I can only confirm what others have said already, especially Ori's comment that what we've done in this program was not limited to the program itself, right? So one of the requirements that we were given by Anil was that much work that we did had to be contributed to CCG and be opened up to a wider discussion, including the issue and verifier HTTP APIs, including the test cases that is in the CCG, and the work will continue. And I think that has been really valuable that this program was not only for implementing and trying out the government use cases, but also for advancing this group and the community as a whole. I think that was one that was the most important and the most interesting part for me.
So on that point, right, the only thing that I will note is that I've been around for a bit in this space, and one of the things that I've discovered with standards organization is sometimes the rubber meets the sky and not the road. That we didn't want that to happen here. So the intent of us being public about it, sharing, working out in the open, sharing our lessons learned, making sure the test artifacts and the test suites are, you know, publicly available to everybody is precisely so that we can feed back the lessons, whether for good or ill, what didn't work, what did work, back into the community so that it actually improves the standardization process. Right, so that is part and parcel of the expectation of the companies that are working in the program that they will continue to do that and do that public engagement.
Manu, I have you on the queue.
Yeah, so with that, I wanted to kind of explain some of the things that we thought were going to be easy, and they ended up being really challenging, right? So as Anil pointed out, when you go to do real interop, meaning that you've actually got a use case in front of you and you're building real software and the software has to meet the use case and it has to interop with other companies' software, you find things that you didn't expect to find, right? So for example, the verifiable credential spec has a test suite. It is a data model test suite. We had multiple companies demonstrating that they were compatible with the test suite. Everyone was passing. When we went to issue credentials and consume credentials, there were parts that didn't line up. And the main reason for that is because the verifiable credentials working group at W3C was limited. We weren't cleared to work on kind of protocol and API. We ended up having to build a decent chunk of that during the Silicon Valley Innovation Program. Things that people felt, you know, weren't going to be that difficult. It was going to be a little bit of a challenge, but not a great challenge, turned out to be a really big challenge because we had to get, you know, all of these companies to agree to what does the API shape look like, what do you pass into the API. And these APIs are kind of like back-end APIs, right? They're not things that are exposed to everyday people, but they are things that systems that need to interop need to have. And so it took us, you know, multiple months to even get to the point where we had the organizations communicating in a way where we could talk about this. We had to have multiple calls around the design, you know, of the APIs and how we were going to do it. And then once we quote unquote locked the spec down, we found that things kept changing. We had to keep modifying and tweaking things so that we could get end-to-end interop working. So, you know, what was viewed, I think, at least this is DigiBazaar's experience, what we viewed as something that was probably going to eat up maybe 10 or 15% of our time ended up eating up probably close to 40% to 50% of our time, right? It's because the interop stuff was so challenging. And it was it was challenging because it was a communication thing. We had to get all these companies to talk with each other. Once they were talking to each other, then the engineering teams had to work through where things weren't, lining up perfectly. The good news is that at the end of the day, it really helped us hammer through what were, you know, dents and dings and whatever in the ecosystem. And because of that, we were able to, as a cohort, all of the companies were able to demonstrate, interop between multiple systems. So the real big value, the immediate value that I think there was to this community, the Credential CG and the DID working group and the Verifiable Credentials maintenance working group was that we were able to push things beyond just the standard W3C test suite and have a higher level set of interoperability tests that help us really demonstrate that it is possible to do real interop here. And that's it.
So I wish we had more time because it sounds like there's a lot of interesting stuff in there. So so I'm about to turn over to Anil, but before that, I just want to mention this. So it would be interesting to understand a bit more the kinds of challenges you ran into, maybe a few examples, but then also I think it's really interesting. It could inform future standardization efforts. You know, we work very most of the specs that we spin out are very similar. We're working on a data model, and so what can we learn from that going forward? So, but I think, you know, if there's something brief to say, add yourself to the queue. Otherwise, I think I'd like to turn over to Anil to just key up the discussion on what he sees as the challenges to solve going forward. And also that will give some time for Q&A for what Anil says.
Kim, is it my turn or should I wait?
I think, yeah, I think it's your turn.
Okay. So just a couple of quick points. We are, again, the work is by no means done. We've demonstrated, a foundational level of interoperability, but we expect to have, we expect to require interop PlugFest for our portfolio companies as they build out the capabilities, increasing the surface area of the tests that are in place, right? So, for example, in this particular case, given COVID-19 or our online life, we were really not able to do any offline presentation testing, interop testing. There were demos, but not testing. That is a real use case for us. So that is something that we expect to do that in the future as well and increase the surface area of the testing. Two areas that I will sort of tee up as things that I'm worried about from our organization comes down to we're making some choices. Let me back up a second. We are, in one case, the authoritative issuer of a digital credential, a permanent resident card. We are the only global authoritative issuer of a U.S. permanent resident card, and our USCIS obviously is, that is the first step in their process. They want to issue other paper-based credentials as well. One of the questions that that I actually had a lot of discussion both internally within our organization as well as our cohort companies is, will you accept a DID that is coming to you as a subject of that DID, or are you expecting to basically issue your own subject DID for that person? And we're open to the possibility that, you know, somebody could present their own DID, do a DID authentication as part of an identity proofing mechanism in order to get a credential issued to them. Having said that, we are very concerned that all DID issuance infrastructures are not the same. All wallets are not the same. The security, privacy, and interoperability characteristics of both are completely and widely unknown. We expect you, for lack of a better word, whitelist a set of DIDs and wallets that we will accept for issuance purposes. The criteria that we use for that is completely undefined. So my approach in the absence of a broader ecosystem play is to brute force it. So we have a four-phase project. In phase three, I expect to be throwing a red team at every single one of our companies in our portfolio to truly understand what they've implemented and the security and privacy choices that they've made. I expect to be gathering a set of data that allows me to sort of create a design pattern around what is the goodness criteria of a wallet or a goodness criteria of a DID issuance infrastructure. I am doing that. That brute force mechanism is what I'm using in the absence of something much more rigorous and cross-platform in the community. So I see that as a fundamental lack. I personally have a way to mitigate that risk internally, but it would be good if the community actually had an approach to it that is not just focused on a one particular monoculture or one particular foundation-based thing, right? So the other piece of it is, so that's one. The second piece of it is for me is I think that we need to pay a whole lot more attention to the usability of wallet experience. I was, it worked. I was but it was constant. So I am in my own head thinking of, hey, we have the ability to do challenges and prizes in order to basically motivate design of user experience and UI in the space. Is it worthwhile to do that? Would that be beneficial so that people can sort of translate these technologies to regular people? Those are two things off at the top of my head that I see has high value items that, from my perspective, that I'm giving a lot of thought to on how to move forward.
Thank you, Anil. And we have Ryan Grant on the queue next.
Hi, Anil. Thank you. My question is, what is the time frame for determining identity wallet whitelisting criteria? How long might that take? And do you have any notions of where DHS will store the registry of whitelisted wallets?
So the long and the short of it is, what is the whitelisting criteria? I won't know what that is until I do the red team testing. So we just finished up phase two. All these companies are moving into phase. We just finished up phase one. These companies are moving into phase two, and I red team in phase three. So anything from 3 to 9 month time frame is what I'm looking at to get enough information that allows me to make some sort of an informed decision, right? So we're, to be blunt, we're not just going to, believe a vendor claims on the magical nature of their wallets. We are actually going to have to develop from scratch assessment criteria, then verify it, at least for the companies that are under contract to us, in order to bootstrap this process.
And Jonathan, you're up next.
So I saw your recent post recently regarding the portability of wallets, and I think that implies
just Jonathan, before you go any further, just one clear point that I want to make, right? I happen to be a public interest technology, just whose day job is as a technical director of the DHS Silicon Valley Innovation Program. That particular post is in my personal opinion and not the opinion of the government. I want to be very clear on that.
I mostly it's just a feedback as far as how we would implement that idea of portability of wallets with identifiers being very specific to the platform of the distributed ledger technology behind it.
So I'm not sure the point that you're making, but what we did demonstrate in the interop is multiple wallet providers being able to interoperate with multiple issuers and multiple verifiers. So we're past the thing of can we demonstrate that interoperability? That's already been done.